So the year was 1965. Here is a photograph from a 1965 high school yearbook. I didn't pick on anybody in the church in particular. So, do you remember these hairstyles? These looks? How many of you were around in maybe high school, or some of you have only seen pictures of this era? I was around, but I was pretty young. Sound of Music was the number one movie of the year. It surprised everybody how this musical transformed from stage to screen. It became the Academy Award winner for Best Picture that year. But it was also a year of discovery and adventure. The space race was on. We were on our way to the moon, trying to get there before the Soviet Union got there. It was a year of tumult. The civil rights movement was in full swing, which was both inspiring and horrifying. It left scenes before us that we could not erase from our minds. This is a scene from the march in Selma and the face-off that occurred there. Life magazine had on the cover LBJ, who was at the time the president. But if you recall, he had become president under very difficult circumstances following the death and the assassination of Kennedy. So the country was still reeling and still recovering and healing after that. And it was the beginning of us sending troops to Vietnam. And so that was very much, this is the November issue of Life that year. So that was, this is the context into which this congregation comes and is formed. 1965. So I want to take you back to that picture. I'm going to come back to that other slide in just a second. That picture, you've seen variations of that over the last few months. It's been on our website. It's been everywhere. And that picture is taken down the road on Benfield Drive, on Benfield Road, and at the end of the first worship service, August of 1965. It was a near-retirement pastor, Edgar Beckett, who had come here for one last chapter of ministry. And he came to build himself a church and to gather a flock. And it was amazing to hear those stories in those early years of great faith and great energy and how people just came together and how you couldn't say no to this guy who would knock on your door day or night, early or late, and give you a job because you were needed and you had a stake in this. And so that early group gathered, and they started to form a church. Now, we've been on this six-month journey. We've been celebrating our 50th anniversary over the months so that we could to appreciate it. And we and the staff, particularly and those in the 50th anniversary committee, we have been on an archaeological dig. We have been digging through old documents and old videos and old audio recordings and trying to uncover this past and trying to pass it on to the congregation as well. And I've learned a few things along the way. It's really been quite a journey for me as a relatively new pastor to this congregation. I have learned about hearing the stories of Wesley Dodge and Jerry Weiss and Warren Ebinger, who was my first district superintendent when I was starting out in ministry, all of the stories of this congregation. And we've been rightly celebrating them, as we should. It's a good thing to do. If you were here last night, raise your hand if you were here last night for the celebration of ministry that happened. It was a great night to say, look at how far we have come as a congregation in terms of ministry and in terms of ministries that have begun and ministries that have gone beyond this church. And it's okay to honor that and give thanks for that, but you can't live there. And if we were to try to live there, pick an era, 65 or 75 or 85 or whatever era you point back to and remember is this golden, wonderful time of the congregation, if we try to live there, we will die as a congregation. That's not a very hopeful word, is it, on an anniversary Sunday? But I know that our district superintendent has seen churches that tried to hold on too long to those traditions, too long to that past, to try to encapsulate it and keep it safe from the rest of the world. And if you live there while the rest of the world is moving on, the church sometimes gets left in the wake. So we honor our forebearers, and we honor the pioneers, and we honor the ones who came before us, but we can't live just like they lived in the past. Yogi Berra died this week, and one of his famous aphorisms that was in the news is, the future ain't what it used to be. He has said that, among others, the future just ain't what it used to be, right? And we know that. We know that sort of in our lives, and we see that all the time. And I want to give you a demonstration of that, just... This is the first prototype Apple computer that Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak came up with. And if they had stopped there and said, well, look at what we did, they made it to 1984. This was the revolutionary Macintosh that changed the computer world, right? So it kept progressing. But if they had stopped there, there would never be this. Here's Steve Jobs holding up this little tiny device called an iPod. And the tagline was what? 1,000 songs in your pocket. 1,000 songs. What a revolution. But they didn't stop there. And we all need one of these now, right? And we all need the 4, then the 5, then the 6, and the 6S. And, you know, all this technology advances. And now Apple's still trying to figure out what's next. Is it the watch? Is it clothing? Is it whatever it is? Now, I hold up the example of Apple because they are a company that knows that unless you innovate, unless you stay current, the future ain't going to be what it used to be, right? And unless churches learn that lesson well, too, and live into that, become part of the world that's around them, not the world that was here 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago, no matter how good it was, we'll be left behind in the dust. And so what the church needs to learn how to do is to learn this ancient future way of being church. That means we still hold on to the past. We still honor the past. We still have these ancient texts like the ones that we heard read today, the story of Joshua calling the people to covenant faithfulness, Paul praying for the church in Ephesus, the stories of Jesus, the stories of our pioneers right here, the stories throughout a couple thousand years of Christian history, right? We need all of that tradition. That's our ancient faith that roots us and grounds us. But we always have to be straddling that line, living in the here and the now. The church has always got to exist in that in-between. And one of the things that's made this church so vibrant over the years is you have learned how to grow and to change and to adapt and to move on. When how many of you remember Wednesday Night Alive? Wednesday Night Alive, great ministry of this church for a time, but it finally ran its course, right? It had to let go so other things could move on. There were some mission ministries. Carpenter's Kitchen used to exist, right? And when that died, what happened? This church helped give birth to something new, right? Heaven's Kitchen grew out of that. And so part of this continual renewal process, and suddenly we find ourselves with a 501c3 up on Wilkins Avenue because God is calling us to that ministry context too. All of these ways that God continues to call and move and shape us in the now, grounded in the past, but straddling that line and moving and trusting God into the future. Learning a new mission is hard, but it can be the most important thing that keeps an institution alive. I remember back in August, I heard this story on NPR, the story of Tulane School of Architecture. Now, the Tulane School of Architecture was known for, particularly in the world of architecture, as training a lot of students in restoration architecture. And it makes sense. New Orleans has all these cool old buildings, and Tulane sits right there. So one of their specialties was they would train up architects who could do restoration architecture, sort of their signature thing. But then 10 years ago, Katrina hit. And the school had to sort of claim a new mission. One of the professors says, I found myself sitting and writing fewer papers and wanting to get students out there into the community. And so over the last 10 years, the Tulane School of Architecture has sort of recreated itself and claimed a new mission because the context has changed for their purpose, right? They still do restoration architecture. It's still part of what they do. They haven't let go of that entirely. But now what they have is students out in the field designing community gardens as the people of New Orleans rebuild. They are designing and building and then handing over keys to houses to residents who were displaced by the storm. And so because of the context changing, they have changed their mission and their purpose. And the church, to stay alive, has to be like that, has to be willing to adapt. And as we make our way forward, we got to hold on to the best. And even some good things we have to be willing to let go of so that we can grab hold of new other things if we're going to be God's faithful community, not just in 2015, but in 2025 and 2035 and 2045. We're going to make it to our 100th anniversary. You know, I've been very humbled recently I've been around some congregations who make us feel like just sort of infants in this Christianity thing. You know, 50 years feels like a big thing, but I've been with friends who are celebrating 100. I was at a district gathering or a regional gathering, and there were people praying for their church going through their 100th anniversary, their 165th anniversary, and their 200th anniversary. all together in that one gathering. We're just babies in this thing. We're just beginning this road. We got a long way to go. And the way you get there is by continuing to renew the covenant. The story that we heard read out of Joshua. Joshua has, at the end of Joshua, the people are in the promised land. Along the way, they've had opportunities. Earlier at Shechem, they also renewed the covenant. He calls them to accountability. He says, who will you serve? And here, finally, at the close of this chapter, as they're going to begin their new life together, he says, all right, today is the day of choice. Do you serve the gods across the river, the gods from your former life, or do you serve the God who has brought you to this point, the one who has found, in whom you have found salvation and life? I know for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, he says. Who are you going to serve? And so he calls the people to renew the covenant. And that's what anniversaries ought to do for us too, right? Call us to renew this covenant, the one that was made in Christ Jesus long ago, the one that we claimed as a congregation 50 years ago, and the one that we better claim again if it's going to have life. I'm reminded of the story of this woman who came in to talk to her pastor one day with her husband. She sort of drug him in, said, we're here for marriage counseling. And so he said, okay, go on. And she says, well, my husband refuses to tell me that he loves me. So the pastor turns to the husband and says, do you have anything to say to that? He said, well, I told her I loved her 50 years ago, and if anything changes, I'll let her know. Now, you can't just live off a promise and a commitment from 50 years ago, can you? You got to keep renewing it along the way. You got to make it fresh. This is the Bishop Kenneth Goodson Chapel at Duke Divinity School. Bishop Goodson was a retired United Methodist bishop, and he was one of my favorite faculty members while I was there. I took one of the best and one of the easiest courses with him. It was called Church Polity 160. I remember that number for some reason. And really what it was getting together with Bishop Goodson, sitting in his office every Friday morning for 2 hours and letting him tell stories. Now, he had been a pastor, he had been a district superintendent, he had been a bishop through some really tumultuous times. He was active in Alabama during the civil rights movement, and churches were in a great frenzy about how to integrate and how to be a counter-witness to some of the things that were going on. And so he was in the middle of it, and he had amazing stories to tell, and his own witness was pretty profound. He told the story one day about being a district superintendent, being in a restaurant, and one of his preachers came in and saw him there and came up to him and said, you know, Reverend Goodson, you know about my call to ministry, but I've never heard about your call to ministry. So can you tell me, when were you called to ministry? Now, Bishop Goodson had this great Alfred Hitchcockian presence. He was sort of big jowls and he spoke like this. Everything sounded profound coming out of his mouth. And with dramatic pause, he sort of pushed himself away from the table. He told that young preacher, he said, son, the last time I was called to ministry was this morning. And the point he was making to us young preachers was that we needed to keep our calls up to date, that we needed to keep our commitments up to date, that churches need to be reminded, especially on anniversary Sundays, that God didn't just call us into existence 50 years ago, right? The last time God called us to ministry was today. The last time God called us to ministry was today. Now, if you're unwilling to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord.